Chapter 6. The papers Captain Morgan had thus seized upon as the fruit of the murder he had committed must have been as perfectly satisfactory to him as could be, for having paid a second visit that evening to Governor Modiford, the pirate lifted anchor the next morning and made sail toward the Gulf of Darien. There, after cruising about in those waters for about a fortnight without falling in with a vessel of any sort, at the end of that time they overhauled a caravel bound from Portobello to Cartagena, which vessel they took, and finding her loaded with nothing better than raw hides, scuttled and sank her, being then about 20 leagues from the main of Cartagena. From the captain of this vessel they learned that the plate fleet was then lying in the harbor of Portobello, not yet having set sail thence, but waiting for the change of the winds before embarking for Spain. Besides this, which was a good deal more to their purpose, the Spaniards told the pirates that the Sewer Simon, his wife, and daughter were confined aboard the vice admiral of that fleet, and that the name of the vice admiral was the Santa Maria y Valladolid. So soon as Captain Morgan had obtained the information he desired, he directed his course straight for the Bay of Santo Blaso, where he might lie safely within the cape of that name without any danger of discovery. That part of the mainland, being entirely uninhabited, and yet be within 20 or 25 leagues of Portobello. Having come safely to this anchorage, he at once declared his intentions to his companions, which were as follows: that it was entirely impossible for them to hope to sail their vessel into the harbor of Portobello, and to attack the Spanish vice admiral, where he lay in the midst of the armed flota. Wherefore, if anything was to be accomplished, it must be undertaken by some subtle design, rather than by open-handed boldness. Having so prefaced what he had to say, he now declared that it was his purpose to take one of the ship's boats, and to go in that to Portobello, trusting for some opportunity to occur to aid him either in the accomplishment of his aims or in the gaining of some further information. Having thus delivered himself, he invited any who dared to do so to volunteer for the expedition, telling them plainly that he would constrain no man to go against his will, for that at best it was a desperate enterprise, possessing only the recommendation that in its achievement the few who undertook it would gain great renown, and perhaps a very considerable booty. And such was the incredible influence of this bold man over his companions, and such was their confidence in his skill and cunning, that not above a dozen of all those aboard hung back from the undertaking, but nearly every man desired to be taken. Of these volunteers Captain Morgan chose 20, among others our Master Harry, and having arranged with his lieutenant that if nothing was heard from the expedition at the end of 3 days he should sail for Jamaica to await news, he embarked upon that enterprise, which, though never heretofore published, was perhaps the boldest and the most desperate of all those that have since made his name so famous. For what could be a more unparalleled undertaking than for a little open boat, containing but 20 men, to enter the harbor of the third strongest fortress of the Spanish mainland with the intention of cutting out the Spanish vice admiral from the midst of a whole fleet of powerfully armed vessels? And how many men in all the world do you suppose would venture such a thing? But there is this to be said of that great buccaneer, that if he undertook enterprises so desperate as this, he yet laid his plans so well that they never went altogether amiss. Moreover, the very desperation of his successes was of such a nature that no man could suspect that he would dare to undertake such things, and accordingly his enemies were never prepared to guard against his attacks. Had he but worn the king's colors, and served under the rules of honest war, he might have become as great and as renowned as Admiral Blake himself. But all that is neither here nor there. What I have to tell you now is that Captain Morgan in this open boat with his 20 mates reached the Cape of Salmedina toward the fall of day. Arriving within view of the harbor, they discovered the plate fleet at anchor, with two men of war and an armed galley riding as a guard at the mouth of the harbor, scarce half a league distant from the other ships. Having spied the fleet in this posture, the pirates presently pulled down their sails and rowed along the coast, feigning to be a Spanish vessel from Nombre de Dios. So hugging the shore, they came boldly within the harbor, upon the opposite side of which you might see the fortress a considerable distance away. Being now come so near to the consummation of their adventure, Captain Morgan required every man to make an oath to stand by him to the last, whereunto our hero swore as heartily as any man aboard, although his heart, I must needs confess, was beating at a great rate at the approach of what was to happen. Having thus received the oaths of all his followers, Captain Morgan commanded the surgeon of the expedition that, when the order was given, he, the medico, was to bore six holes in the boat, so that, at sinking under them, they might all be compelled to push forward, with no chance of retreat. And such was the ascendancy of this man over his followers, and such was their awe of him, that not one of them uttered, even so much as a murmur, though what he had commanded the surgeon to do pledged them either to victory or to death, with no chance to choose between. Nor did the surgeon question the orders he had received, much less did he dream of disobeying them. By now it had fallen pretty dusk, whereupon, spying two fishermen in a canoe at a little distance, Captain Morgan demanded of them in Spanish which vessel of those at anchor in the harbor was the vice admiral, for that he had dispatches for the captain thereof. Whereupon the fishermen, suspecting nothing, pointed to them a galleon of great size riding at anchor not half a league distant. Toward this vessel accordingly the pirates directed their course, and when they had come pretty nigh, Captain Morgan called upon the surgeon, that now it was time for him to perform the duty that had been laid upon him. Whereupon the other did as he was ordered, and that so thoroughly, that the water presently came gushing into the boat in great streams, whereat all hands pulled for the galleon, as though every next moment was to be their last. And what do you suppose were our hero's emotions at this time? Like all in the boat, his awe of Captain Morgan was so great that I do believe he would rather have gone to the bottom than have questioned his command, even when it was to scuttle the boat. Nevertheless, when he felt the cold water gushing about his feet, for he had taken off his shoes and stockings, he became possessed with such a fear of being drowned that even the Spanish galleon had no terrors for him if he could only feel the solid planks thereof beneath his feet. Indeed, all the crew appeared to be possessed of a like dismay, for they pulled at the oars with such an incredible force that they were under the quarter of the galleon before the boat was half filled with water. Here, as they approached, it then being pretty dark and the moon not yet having risen, the watch upon the deck hailed them, whereupon Captain Morgan called out in Spanish that he was Captain Alvarez Mendazo, and that he brought dispatches for the vice admiral. But at that moment, the boat being now so full of water as to be logged, it suddenly tilted upon one side, as though to sink beneath them, whereupon all hands, without further orders, went scrambling up the side, as nimble as so many monkeys, each armed with a pistol in one hand, and a cutlass in the other, and so were upon deck before the watch could collect his wits to utter any outcry, or to give any other alarm than to cry out, "Jesu bless us! Who are these?" The butt of a pistol, though who it was our hero could not tell in the darkness and the hurry. Before any of those upon deck could recover from their alarm or those from below come up upon deck, a part of the pirates, under the carpenter and the surgeon, had run to the gun room and had taken possession of the arms, while Captain Morgan, with Master Harry and a Portuguese called Mirilo Brasiliano, had flown with the speed of the wind into the great cabin. Here they found the captain of the vice admiral playing at cards with the Sewer Simon and a friend, Madame Simon and her daughter being present. Captain Morgan instantly set his pistol at the breast of the Spanish captain, swearing with a most horrible fierce countenance, that if he spake a word, or made any outcry he was a dead man. As for our hero, having now got his hand into the game, he performed the same service for the Spaniard's friend, declaring he would shoot him dead, if he opened his lips or lifted, so much as a single finger. All this while the ladies, not comprehending what had occurred, had sat as mute as stones, but now having so far recovered themselves, as to find a voice, the younger of the two fell to screaming, at which the sewer Simon called out to her to be still, for these were friends who had come to help them, and not enemies who had come to harm them. All this, you are to understand, occupied only a little while, for in less than a minute three or four of the pirates had come into the cabin, who, together with the Portuguese, proceeded at once to bind the two Spaniards hand and foot, and to gag them. This being done to our buccaneer's satisfaction, and the Spanish captain being stretched out in the corner of the cabin, he instantly cleared his countenance of its terrors, and bursting forth into a great loud laugh, clapped his hand to the sewer Simon's, which he wrung with the best will in the world. Having done this, and being in a fine humor after this his first success, he turned to the two ladies. "And this, ladies," said he, taking our hero by the hand and presenting him, "is a young gentleman who has embarked with me to learn the trade of piracy. I recommend him to your politeness. Think what a confusion this threw our master Harry into, to be sure, who at his best was never easy in the company of strange ladies. You may suppose what must have been his emotions, to find himself thus introduced to the attention of Madame Simon and her daughter, being at the time in his bare feet, clad only in his shirt and breeches, and with no hat upon his head, a pistol in one hand and a cutlass in the other. However, he was not left for long to his embarrassments, for almost immediately, after he had thus far relaxed, Captain Morgan fell of a sudden serious again, and bidding the sewer Simon to get his ladies away into some place of safety, for the most hazardous part of this adventure was yet to occur, he quitted the cabin with Master Harry and the other pirates, for you may call him a pirate now, at his heels. Having come upon deck, our hero beheld that a part of the Spanish crew were huddled forward in a flock-like, so many sheep, the others being crowded below with the hatches fastened upon them. And such was the terror of the pirates, and so dreadful the name of Henry Morgan, that not one of those poor wretches dared to lift up his voice to give any alarm, nor even to attempt an escape by jumping overboard. At Captain Morgan's orders, these men, together with certain of his own company, ran nimbly aloft, and began setting the sails, which, the night now having fallen pretty thick, was not for a good, while observed by any of the vessels riding at anchor about them. Indeed, the pirates might have made good their escape, with at most only a shot or two from the men of war, had it not then been about the full of the moon, which, having arisen, presently discovered to those of the fleet that lay closest about them what was being done aboard the vice-admiral. At this one of the vessels hailed them, and then after a while, having no reply, hailed them again. Even then the Spaniards might not immediately have suspected anything was amiss, but only that the vice-admiral for some reason best known to himself was shifting his anchorage, had not one of the Spaniards aloft, but who it was Captain Morgan was never able to discover, answered the hail by crying out that the vice-admiral had been seized by the pirates. At this the alarm was instantly given, and the mischief done, for presently there was a tremendous bustle through that part of the fleet lying nighest the vice-admiral, a deal of shouting of orders, a beating of drums, and the running hither and thither of the crews. But by this time the sails of the vice-admiral had filled with a strong land breeze that was blowing up the harbor, whereupon the carpenter, at Captain Morgan's orders, having cut away both anchors, the galleon presently bore away up the harbor, gathering headway every moment with the wind nearly dead astern. The nearest vessel was the only one that for the moment was able to offer any hindrance. This ship, having by this time cleared away one of its guns, was able to fire a parting shot against the Vice Admiral, striking her somewhere forward, as our hero could see by a great shower of splinters that flew up in the moonlight. At the sound of the shot, all the vessels of the flota not yet disturbed by the alarm were aroused at once, so that the pirates had the satisfaction of knowing that they would have to run the gantlet of all the ships between them and the open sea before they could reckon themselves escaped. And, indeed, to our hero's mind it seemed that the battle which followed must have been the most terrific cannonade that was ever heard in the world. It was not so ill at first, for it was some while before the Spaniards could get their guns clear for action, they being not the least in the world prepared for such an occasion as this. But by and by first one, and then another ship opened fire upon the galleon, until it seemed to our hero that all the thunders of heaven let loose upon them could not have created a more prodigious uproar, and that it was not possible that they could any of them escape destruction. By now the moon had risen full and round, so that the clouds of smoke that rose in the air appeared as white as snow. The air seemed full of the hiss and screaming of shot, each one of which, when it struck the galleon, was magnified by our hero's imagination into 10 times its magnitude from the crash which it delivered, and from the cloud of splinters it would cast up into the moonlight. At last he suddenly beheld one poor man knocked sprawling across the deck, who, as he raised his arm from behind the mast, disclosed that the H and was gone from it, and that the shirt sleeve was red with blood in the moonlight. At this sight all the strength fell away from poor Harry, and he felt sure that a like fate, or even a worse, must be in store for him. But, after all, this was nothing to what it might have been in broad daylight, for what with the darkness of night, and the little preparati on the Spaniards, could make for such a business, and the extreme haste with which they discharged their guns, many not understanding what was the occasion of all this uproar. Nearly all the shot flew so wide of the mark, that not above 1 in 20 struck that at which it was aimed. Meantime Captain Morgan, with the Sewer Simon, who had followed him upon deck, stood just above where our hero lay behind the shelter of the bulwark. The captain had lit a pipe of tobacco, and he stood now in the bright moonlight close to the rail, with his hands behind him, looking out ahead with the utmost coolness imaginable, and paying no more attention to the din of battle than though it were 20 leagues away. Now and then he would take his pipe from his lips, to utter an order to the man at the wheel. Excepting this he stood there hardly moving at all, the wind blowing his long red hair over his shoulders. Had it not been for the armed galley the pirates might have got the galleon away with no great harm done in spite of all this cannonading, for the man of war which rode at anchor nighest to them at the mouth of the harbor was still so far away that they might have passed it by hugging pretty close to the shore, and that without any great harm being done to them in the darkness. But just at this moment, when the open water lay in sight, came this galley pulling out from behind the point of the shore in such a manner as either to head our pirates off entirely or else to compel them to approach so near to the man of war that that latter vessel could bring its guns to bear with more effect. This galley, I must tell you, was like others of its kind such as you may find in these waters, the hull being long and cut low to the water so as to allow the oars to dip freely. The bow was sharp, and projected far out ahead, mounting a swivel upon it, while at the stern a number of galleries built one above another into a castle, gave shelter to several companies of musketeers as well as the officers commanding them. Our hero could behold the approach of this galley from above the starboard bulwarks, and it appeared to him impossible for them to hope to escape either it or the man of war. But still Captain Morgan maintained the same composure that he had exhibited all the while, only now and then delivering an order to the man at the wheel, who, putting the helm over, threw the bows of the galleon around more to the larboard, as though to escape the bow of the galley, and get into the open water beyond. This course brought the pirates ever closer and closer to the man of war, which now began to add its thunder to the din of the battle, and with so much more effect, that at every discharge you might hear the crashing and crackling of splintered wood, and now and then the outcry, or groaning of some man who was hurt. Indeed, had it been daylight, they must at this juncture all have perished, though, as was said, what with the night and the confusion and the hurry, they escaped entire destruction, though more by a miracle than through any policy upon their own part. Meantime the galley, steering as though to come aboard of them, had now come so near that it too, presently began to open its musketry fire upon them, so that the humming and rattling of bullets were presently added to the din of cannonading. In 2 minutes more it would have been aboard of them, when in a moment Captain Morgan roared out of a sudden to the man at the helm, to put it hard a starboard. In response the man ran the wheel over with the utmost quickness, and the galleon, obeying her helm very readily, came around upon a course which, if continued, would certainly bring them into collision with their enemy. It is possible at first the Spaniards imagined the pirates intended to escape past their stern, for they instantly began backing oars to keep them from getting past, so that the water was all of a foam about them. At the same time they did this, they poured in such a fire of musketry, that it was a miracle, that no more execution was accomplished than happened. As for our hero, methinks for the moment he forgot all about everything else than, as to whether, or no his captain's maneuver would succeed, for in the very first moment he divined, as by some instinct, what Captain Morgan purposed doing. At this moment, so particular in the execution of this nice design, a bullet suddenly struck down the man at the wheel. Hearing the sharp outcry, our Harry turned to see him fall forward, and then to his hands and knees upon the deck, the blood running in a black pool beneath him, while the wheel, escaping from his hands, spun over until the spokes were all of a mist. In a moment the ship would have fallen off before the wind had not our hero, leaping to the wheel even as Captain Morgan shouted an order for someone to do so, seized the flying spokes, whirling them back again, and so bringing the bow of the galleon up to its former course. In the first moment of this effort he had reckoned of nothing but of carrying out his captain's designs. He neither thought of cannonballs nor of bullets. But now that his task was accomplished, he came suddenly back to himself to find the galleries of the galley aflame with musket shots, and to become aware with a most horrible sinking of the spirits, that all the shots therefrom were intended for him. He cast his eyes about him with despair, but no one came to ease him of his task, which, having undertaken, he had too much spirit to resign from carrying through to the end, though he was well aware that the very next instant might mean his sudden and violent death. His ears hummed and rang, and his brain swam as light as a feather. I know not whether he breathed, but he shut his eyes tight, as though that might save him from the bullets that were raining about him. At this moment the Spaniards must have discovered for the first time the pirates' design, for of a sudden they ceased firing, and began to shout out a multitude of orders, while the oars lashed the water all about with a foam. But it was too late then for them to escape, for within a couple of seconds the galleon struck her enemy a blow so violent upon the larboard quarter as nearly to hurl our Harry upon the deck, and then with a dreadful, horrible crackling of wood, commingled with a yelling of men's voices, the galley was swung around upon her side, and the galleon, sailing into the open sea, left nothing of her immediate enemy, but a sinking wreck, and the water dotted all over with bobbing heads, and waving hands in the moonlight. And now, indeed, that all danger was past and gone, there were plenty to come running, to help our hero at the wheel. As for Captain Morgan, having come down upon the main deck, he fetches the young helmsman a clap upon the back. Well, Master Harry, says he, and did I not tell you I would make a man of you? Whereat our poor Harry fell laughing, but with a sad catch in his voice, for his hands trembled, as with an ague, and were as cold as ice. As for his emotions, God knows he was nearer crying than laughing, if Captain Morgan had but known it. Nevertheless, though undertaken under the spur of the moment, I protest it was indeed a brave deed, and I cannot but wonder how many young gentlemen of 16 there are today who, upon a like occasion, would act as well as our Harry. The Book of Pirates,